And here's your prescription.
I know just the pharmacy to get this filled.
Who are you?
A pharmacy benefit manager. A middleman your insurer uses to decide which medicines you can get, what you pay, and sometimes even which pharmacy you should go to.
Why can't I go to a pharmacy in my neighborhood?
Because I make more money when you go to a pharmacy I own.
No one should stand between you and your medicine. Visit phrma.org/middleman to learn more. Paid for by Pharma.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex, what, go blue or go blue?
Go blue. I guess it is. I'm Alex Kirshner. That's Richard Johnson. Stephen Godfrey, hello. How are you?
I got bags under my eyes because of my my favorite university in all of college football.
So I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. Godfrey and Richard are here. Everyone's probably chomping at the bit to talk about Michigan. We're working on it. More here shortly, where we will share extensive thoughts.
We are literally working on it.
So we're working on Michigan here. It's obviously a huge story. And we are not intentionally ignoring it, but we are going to bifurcate a little bit. We're going to do...
Actually, quite literally the exact opposite.
We are going to do the show about non-Michigan science dealing investigation matters, because there are other things to discuss. But just rest assured, that's not being ignored. And if you hang tight with this feed where you're listening to this podcast, in the near future, we expect that you'll have more on the situation in Ann Arbor and beyond. But first,
those of you on the YouTube, in the YouTube gang that have been watching Split Zone Duo on YouTube, have like made comments before about like, what are they doing off? Like, sometimes one of us has to check like a text because we record in the season. Obviously, things are happening. It's going to be a fun day for Easter eggs of us like fiddling around off camera. I'm just speaking for myself. Folks. Yeah,
my phone is going to ring during this podcast. This is gonna
be sloppy and fun. You guys get to come in really into the kitchen on this one. We're not gonna do the fancy Michelin star presentation. This is just gonna be like, pull up a seat and help us chop onions, because we got to make a stew, a Jim Harbaugh stew. Do you see how tired I am? Do you see what you do to me, Wolverines?
That's coming.
I was on the phone last night. Richard, I'm just going to tease a little bit more, Alex.
Okay.
I was on the phone late last night. I had to get up this morning, rewrite a column. Very grumpy about that. You know what? Might have to rewrite it again.
We will be back.
The coach who was on the phone with me until midnight is listening to this podcast. Thank you for your candor.
We will be back with more Michigan. Let's talk about the rest of the college football situation as it is right now. It's week 9. And I say this every week now, but time is flying, and this season is dwindling. No,
it really is, dude. It's crazy that it's Halloween already.
I think this every year, but I especially think
costumes?
It this year. Here's the nice thing, the kind of reassuring thing to tell you that no things costumes. Are not going as fast as they say. No, is that there's still a lot of time for things to go really good or really bad. For a lot of teams that still have, I think, a wide dispersion of not just how their records could wind up, but how the 2023 season could wind up for them narratively, structurally, in terms of where it leaves them going forward. And we figured that it might be fun this week to talk about some of these could go either way programs, kind of a game of best case, worst case, with 4 or 5 games left in everybody's schedule. How does that sound?
Alex, as I look down in my crotch. Yep, everything's fine.
To Godfrey's point, which costume will these teams be wearing by the end of the season? Will it be the best case scenario, or will it be the worst case scenario?
Do y'all dress up, or is that like, I don't know? I've never asked this question.
Dude, I got a party on Friday night, and like, I'm gonna have to dress. It's one of those where like, if I don't dress up, all my friends are gonna be really annoying about it. Mm-hmm. So I am working on
They're
it.
Gonna Anybody be mad has at you? Okay.
Yeah. If anybody has any suggestions, please, by all means. I'm terrible at this, and I can't do a couple's costume. Significant other's not gonna be counted.
Yeah, Richard,
a Trevor Lawrence jersey?
Not a Trevor Lawrence jersey.
You could do the reverse race thing and just get a Trevor Lawrence jersey and then like a blonde wig.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would be awesome. So I haven't dressed up for Halloween in I think 20 plus years, and I am donning my first costume on Halloween at the
Family
request
costume?
Of my. Well, my 3-year-old daughter, I don't know if it, this, look, we're going to get way off course because I like to give Alex sure the agita at the top of every show. The Super Mario Brothers film is basically Citizen Kane in my household. She is Princess Peach, and she has asked me to be Bowser. So 6'5" dad is going to be walking around the neighborhood fully dressed as Bowser.
She's got vision. I've always liked that kid. She's got vision.
She talked me into a costume, and I've never, like, I really can't remember the last time I had a Halloween costume on.
I don't do a lot of Halloween costumes. We don't do a lot of Halloween costumes in our house because of certain birthdays that fall close to Halloween and created like a elementary school annoyance at birthdays not being celebrated because it was Halloween.
Wait, what?
He's told this story before. Actually.
I've told this story before. Yeah. It's,
oh, do you have a sibling that's like has a close birthday to this?
If someone in the family's got a birthday right around Halloween, then Halloween is a birthday celebration. Not a Halloween celebration.
Well, my sister's birthday is December 27th, and we tell her basically to fucking deal with it. So,
okay. Well, that's
you
one approach.
Get in the way of the birth of our Lord, Alex.
That is one approach that you could take. Anyway, this is the situation, though. Still lots of room for things to go up, lots of room for things to go down. And I want to start with the University of Southern California. We're going to play best case, worst case. USC has two losses. And I think the best case question for this program now is kind of interesting because I did some sorting through this. I actually do not believe that USC's playoff elimination is 100%. Oh, it is extremely close. It's extremely close.
What?
It's extremely close that I turn into a supermodel tomorrow.
Well, Richard, you'd be great.
You are a supermodel.
But I will say
everybody is a runway body.
Reasonable best case. Reasonable best case, barring a lot of problems befalling a number of ACC and Big 12 and Big 10 teams, is that USC is playing for a non-playoff New Year's Six Bowl, which would be a disappointment given the way things went last year. So I think that USC has essentially established itself as an on-field disappointment for 2023 with really only one outcome going forward, which would be to win out and then win a bowl game that I think would leave people thinking, oh, okay, like pretty good. Not what we wanted, but pretty good. I think they lose one more, and I think they probably will if you look at the Oregon and Washington games that are still on that schedule. And, you know, you have some questions about where things might wind up for USC this season. The worst case for USC, though, Richard, is what I'm most interested in. And what I think you're most interested in as well, because, you know, who doesn't love mess on this program? Could things get, like, I just mentioned that Washington and Oregon are both still on the schedule. The Oregon game being at Autzen. Like, is it possible that we're looking at, like, 8-4 or 7-5? And if so, what does that do to a program that I know for a fact isn't recruiting the way that they want? And that might have some momentum stalling to the extent that they have momentum in the first place.
Well, I mean, look, it's pretty clear here that, like, this is not what we wanted. Could get worse. Who's to say they beat UCLA at the end of the season, first and foremost?
Could be 7-5.
You got ground to dust by you. But, like, you know, we're going beyond the, like, kind of schedule prediction here to kind of add some context to how these things could really break Brad or break well. And, like, dude, that thing that Alex Grinch was quoted yesterday by Alex Morissette, or excuse me, his name's Connor Morissette. Connor Morissette, who's a staff writer at USCfootball.com, sorry, I was pulling it up, said that, paraphrasing Alex Grinch, said that USC had trouble with the Sione Vaki wheel routes in the Utah game because they hadn't seen it on film.
But
Sione Vaki ran a wheel route the game before they played the USC.
Which, not only was this game before, guys, but his first game playing running back for more than a snap, meaning, like, what should you be paying the most attention to at all of that game,
guys,
is, like, probably the safety playing running back who is crazy. It's crazy.
The safety playing running back has, I believe, 30 snaps where he's playing on offense and not playing quarterback. Guys, there's only, like, 5 routes you can run as a running back, literally.
Is it even that
in
many?
College football?
Dump off,
hook over
angle,
the ball,
wheel.
You go straight vertically.
Screen,
you do the Texas route, the angle route. You do a flat route, or you run a wheel. Holy cow!
you're talking about one, pass routes.
That one tilted me, so, I will say.
Richard, it's interesting. Alex Grinch was talking to the media because Lincoln Riley has excused himself from media availabilities this week. And I've seen a lot going around to the effect of he's running from it because, well, I mean, Lord knows we've spent way too much time talking about Lincoln Riley's management of the press this week. My understanding is that he is actually ill and has not been in the building for a few days. Have heard that on a couple of fronts. I don't think that he is legitimately like running from the microphones this week. I think like people actually do get sick. That still happens in the world. But I think USC maybe in general needs to stay away from the microphones. Actually, he might be onto something with that.
No, and just like I don't think it's a.
Here's what they need to do.
I don't think they need to stay away from the microphone.
They got Cliff, baby. Like, Cliff is acting head coach, right? Or like fake head coach for like 3 days or something like that. Look,
I didn't know.
We've all seen the episode of Saved by the Bell, where Mr. Belding's much more attractive, much more fun younger brother comes in as a substitute teacher.
Have we all seen that?
God, I hate being around young people. Anyway, you got Cliff. Just let it ride for a week. Seriously, Cliff's fun. Let him get in there, chop it up with the media. You guys are so bad at PR. It blows my mind how you're in the number two media market in the United States. And in the number two media market in the United States, like, you are usually like the number two game in town. It's receded in recent years, but like when Pete was there, it was like Lakers Trojans. Like, they had a huge sidewalk fan base. How are you guys screwing this up this bad? Trot Cliff out there, tell some jokes. Lincoln's under the weather. Oh, well, like, one of the ways that the Trojans became the Trojans in this modern run of college football was a likable sort of like a showbiz kind of flair. And the thing that's sticking, like, in a very non-football sense, you just should have fired your DC after last year because you're wasting a Heisman candidate, but or Heisman winner, I'm sorry. The thing that just blows my mind is like you have to do Showtime when you're in Los Angeles and you're USC, and like, he's so fucking bad at that.
Well, here's one thing.
Like, if you're going to be a butthurt guy in Norman, you can't like you're just not going to survive in LA.
Here's one thing, Godfrey, that I do, and look, the player's not speaking to the media after the Utah game or in general. I know that a lot of fans want to say, oh, it's not a big deal, media is whining, like, yada, yada. I understand why people would think that media is whining about that. To an extent, media is whining about that. But I also do truly believe, and I think I've said this on this show before, if you are leader of men, training these young men up to go on into their professional lives, whether in football or otherwise, I think it is incumbent on you to not hide them, at least the front-facing ones, when things get difficult and when they have to respond to a loss. Will eventually one of them say something dumb? Yes, that is the way of the world. It happens in the NFL too. Mm-hmm. But I do think you are not doing your job if you say you are trying to train up and develop the total athlete. I don't think you're doing your job if you hide the, you know, Zach Branch is a freshman, so different story. I get why freshmen don't talk to me. But Zach Branch, a freshman, Caleb Williams, Marshawn Lloyd, like the players who are front facing. Yeah. Because you know who's going to have to talk to the media every single week, bar none, even if he's going 0-17? Mr. Williams in number 13. That's by contracted mandate in the National Football League.
Also, Caleb is not going to be your problem saying something dumb. Like, Caleb, I mean, he might say something like a little bit inflammatory, but Caleb's pretty savvy, has been my judgment of him.
This could go off the rails because of this idea of, it's not even an idea. It's like a boilerplate statement from the coaching establishment in college that putting a microphone in front of players is somehow the quickest way to undo a program. When in actuality, like, coaches themselves have been so adept at doing that themselves at the podium. It's always been like a bullshit trope that coaches have pushed that players talking to media are somehow going to be the undoing of a program. It just doesn't happen.
Can't think of a single example of when it has. Godfrey, on the other side of this game, best case, worst case, Utah has been interesting to us. And Richard and I have talked about this a few times, including while you were sick, that on the one hand, it's hard to take them seriously because of all the injuries, but what occurred on Saturday was pretty damn serious. So best case, worst case me in the last third of the season for Utah.
Yeah, get well soon. I just realized that he's probably like, how old is Lincoln? He's probably 30s. My elderly age, and we have to be really careful about COVID because we're so old. So get well soon, buddy. It did kick my ass. Get your booster. I am here to be the appreciator of Utah because this program has aired dramatically in previous years about not respecting Utah. And I also feel like Utah occupies sort of a horror, in the Halloween sense of it, like a horror movie kind of sensibility of showing up and remembering and beating down your door with an axe and beating the crap out of your Tiffany brand conference champion. I am here to respect Utah regardless of what that depth chart looks like. So best case scenario, Mr. Kirshner, is that you, and look, wait, did y'all actually watch the Arizona State Washington game?
As I said, I did not.
Yeah,
Richard watched that for us. I came back to it.
But it was ass. Like, it was insane that was the same team.
There was always going to be a game. There was always going to be a game where offense doesn't go boom.
It was like a Disney movie where like a dog played court. It was just, I don't know what the hell was going on. Anyway, I'll leave that analysis to y'all. There is definitely a reality, even with the injuries sustained at really in integral positions at Utah, that they can beat Oregon and Washington. Okay, that's why I was referencing Washington's effort against Arizona State. Okay, also buried in the usual sort of like press conference pablum, I think when Witt gets this honest, I take notice because I don't think he doesn't really operate in a lot of bullshit on the podium. His quote on Monday was, "Our 1-85 roster is the deepest it's ever been, and we've really tapped into it." When a coach says that,
yeah, they got a safety at running back.
But what I'm saying is, like, when a coach says that mid-season in the wake of the losses sustained, he is not hedging his bets. He is being totally honest. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win these games because he said that, but if he believes that, he's saying that because he believes it. You would never extend your position like that publicly if you didn't believe it. So I take note of that. That's how you can kind of parse what's real and what's not on the podium. So that the best case is you beat Oregon, you beat Washington, you have the ability to run the table here. The worst case, and it's sort of, I'm couching worst case because I think Utah has already done so much this season, is that, hey, you know what? You did lose your quarterback. You lost your tight end. You lost your, they just lost their starting linebacker. You're going into Oregon. I mean, there is that reality. You have Washington ahead.
They have at
ahead,
least three losable games. Which is
right. That's funny. What. So yeah, they have 2-3 losses that I would mark playing the schedule game. Those, I guess, that is the worst case scenario. It's still really hard to frame that, like, Utah has a 4-loss season and it's a worst case scenario when you are running a safety at running back because you have to. Like, it's still hard to say, okay, worst case scenario. I think if anything, if we are talking about a 4-loss Utah at the end of the season, that's not a failure by any stretch, given the circumstances of this season. If you go out and say preseason, you're going to lose Cam Rising after how many games was it?
He didn't play.
Zero.
Wait, he hasn't played at all. I meant declared for the year. Like, if you said after X amount of games, you know you're not going to have him back. This is the kind of like, this is where we buy into what the boys have already previously said about Kyle Whittingham maybe being like a top 5 coach in all of college football. This is what we talk about when we talk about program management and depth management. Like, this is what we talk about when we, like, you know how consistency gets thrown around a lot? This is evidence of consistency. The ability to plug and play at literally the most crucial position and still win and sometimes dominate.
Steven, you make a good point. Also, I get it why Notre Dame tried to hire Andy Ludwig, the OC for them. Like, I understand.
Also, how badly did Vanderbilt screw up his ability? Because, man, I think it's I know the Ryan Grubb thing got the most play because he snubbed Alabama, but looking at who didn't go to Notre Dame is really telling. That was something I kind of pondered on after they lost to Ohio State. In terms of the OC search, like, they could add Sean Lewis technically. So,
what the one thing about Utah is, like, there's also a funny way this breaks where they lose two of these games coming home and win one. Like, they beat Washington, right? Or they beat, like, they just, and I don't mean beat Washington, I mean like beat up Washington, right? Like, there's a funny way this breaks here. That's like, I understand for Utah fans, you don't want to lose games. So, like, there's your worst case scenario. But for us, funny, right?
I don't want to get into Colorado, right? And like, I know post Stanford, the Colorado thing has like diminished significantly. Colorado is equipped to upset at least one more really good team still, in my opinion, but I really don't think it's this one. Like this is the team that's kind of built to take the Colorados and kind of just choke, like boa constrictor them, what, as evidenced by the way they play USC.
I don't want to do this all the way, but like Kyle Whittingham's like how literally viscerally offended do you think Kyle Whittingham is by the
same way that Lanning thing. Was Whittingham is
I mean, I don't want to like club. I'm not trying to paint this as like Dion versus the MAGA dads, because it's but in practice, right. Yes, Kyle Whittingham might be anathema. Like, although, man, I don't want to get into the ditch here, but like, I don't know if you guys have noticed in the last 2 weeks, but Dion's pressers have changed dramatically, and he's much more of a coach now. It's like all of the sort of like, it's like the pro wrestling entrance phase of his career has ended, and now he's just actually working. Like, he had, to go back to Michigan, like, he had a very rational Michigan take this week. I think he's settling in a way that maybe by the time that they get to the Utah game, I can't see Kyle Whittingham, Richard, maybe to your point, using it the way Dan Lanning did.
Mm.
Like, he would just probably like turn his nose up and move on.
Sure. Richard.
I would, maybe.
The other USC, best case, worst case, South Carolina Gamecocks. Because they're 2-5. Things are grim right now.
It's getting a little dicey. I didn't look, the best case is, you know, you mess up A&M's night next week.
No. Say it like you wrote it. Say it like you wrote it in the notes.
What is it? Oh, in the notes. You fuck Clemson and A&M's night up.
This is how Defense Good Orange Bowl was born. Richard writes the most succinct, funny notes in our show doc.
Like, obviously you get one, maybe you get both, and obviously you beat a rival at the end of the season. However hilarious, like, it's awesome to beat Clemson if you're South Carolina, and you haven't done it a lot in the last decade. But the worst case, we're pretty much there. I mean, if we're driving towards the worst case, we are in the red zone there. I mean, you're 2-5. A bowl game is unlikely at this
point. Very unlikely. Yeah. Yeah.
You have lost to the teams in your tier of the SEC. You have lost to Florida. You have lost to Missouri.
Yeah.
You have lost to that band of teams that you think, oh, we get one, we get both. It's kind of nice. We're frisky, yada, yada, yada. So those are L's. This is pretty much it. You know, this is pretty much the worst case of, like, I didn't think they were going to backslide and miss a bowl this year. But if you play that fine 5-7 win margin, which they do, because that's the slide. Station of life that they are, it can happen.
Richard, it's kind of interesting to pick through what's happened here, because, like, in a way, it's like, how'd they win twice? Like 3-9 might actually be pretty good. Because if you look at the offensive line is horrible. Like, when you think of bad offensive lines in college football this year, that one is like, might be the one that I play the word association game with. They lost Juice Wells in the first half of the Georgia game in what was that, week 3? Yeah,
they did.
Three.
I don't even think they really had him. Like, he came into that game hurt.
The line situation is what it is. The defense has been the big decliner. And I know they lost 3 or so NFL picks from that defense, but they just can't stop you running. They can't stop you passing. They don't do anything right on defense. And it's almost just like it's X Leggett and Spencer Rattler just playing like the closest thing you'll ever see to a 2-man operation here, just trying to like drag them to a shred of competency, and it's not really working. It's weird that they're this bad, but in a way, it's weird that they're not worse.
Well, the wins are Furman and Mississippi State. Like, they were not going to lose those games.
They weren't going to lose Furman. No.
Weird to say that about Mississippi State, guys. We are going to open up 24 with a conversation about how, it will get hot quickly.
Richard, in terms of, like, where this goes for them, I don't believe, I've heard nothing to the effect, either, you know, whispers, water cooler talk, or reading, nothing to the effect that Shane Beamer's in any trouble there this year. Does this change
no
the outlook for him, just in terms of his standing with that fan base, with that booster core, with that athletic department going forward?
This is one of those that, to Godfrey's point, no, in my belief. I do think that this is one of those you never want to say you shouldn't have had success in the first year. That is not what I ever mean. The object of the exercise is to win football games. But similarly to the Mel Tucker 10-win season, it gets you in a spot where expectations raise and then it flattens. Again, I'm not saying you don't want to win games. The object of the exercise is to win. But you understand how this can happen from a perception standpoint.
Fair enough. Godfrey, I know you've been kind of itching to talk about this one. Appalachian State is sub 500. You can guess how many times they have been sub 500 as an FBS program. Zero is that number. And very few as an FCS program either. They don't like to lose lots of games. Best case me here, I suspect it's not great. And worst case me here, I suspect it's pretty bad.
For purposes of the exercise that Alex usually assigns Richard and I, sometimes it's hard to make it work within the sort of the framework of the exercise.
Then break it. In this case, that's fine.
I'm not trying to be glib or subvert what you're doing, although I usually do that. It's just hard to find a best case scenario here because Alex, this was a team expected to win the East, expected to win the conference or compete to win the conference. And I don't really know if that's possible now. So I don't know if you can salvage a best case. This was a coaching staff that overhauled its assistants to look more app in the offseason. They brought back, multiple former app assistants, especially on the defensive side. It just has not mattered. The standard here is really important to talk about. So they're tied in the East right now for, in terms of division losses with two. It's not mathematically impossible to win the East. It's just really close because everything's jumbled up right now. I think I've got it as they would need to win out every single game. Plus, they would have to have at least Georgia State, Coastal, and ODU all take an additional loss in addition to the teams that have not played them yet losing to them. And again, I'm only framing this around the division right now because the expectation was that they would come back, challenge whoever in the West, win the conference. Like, that is their standard. Worst case is right now. Worst case is happening right now for them. That doesn't, like, I'm not talking about, just to be super clear, like, App thinks that they can compete with North Carolina on the field, and they have, but losing, like, that game is not the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is, like, losing two consecutive Sun Belt conference games to teams that they probably should have beat. They barely beat Louisiana Monroe.
Probably should have lost that game. And you could say they could have beaten Coastal.
And that actually kind of sets me up from where I'm headed here. They're not like, far they from dropped a last second game to an inferior team in ODU. They have, let's see if I've got, I was digging into this last night because like on a surface, it's not super bad. It's not like they've cratered. They've been in a one score game, 12 of their last 19. And in those 12 one score games, they've lost 9. That's the problem. Now, like other teams would have some context there and say, hey, like we're competing, but at App, the expectation is that you win. The defense is not good. The defense has been especially bad. It's specifically against the run. Teams can grind on them, and you're seeing more and more Sun Belt teams. I don't want to say like get bigger, but it's like if you don't pay attention to G5 football, it's not all facsimiles of the Texas Air Raid anymore. A lot of teams are figuring out you can put a little power in and run your way to victory. And against App, that has like especially been the case the last couple, like especially this season.
It's funny because if you historically or like conventionally, the way to look at a team that just keeps losing these hard luck close games is like, you know, eventually it'll turn. You'll start winning some of these games. And if you have advantages in your conference, the easiest example from the last few years is Toledo, which has been a nightmare one score game team for a few years. But ultimately just like had the recruiting, had the guys in the program, and they won the MAC last year, and they probably are going to win the MAC again this year now that Miami of Ohio has big injury problems. But it's hard to wait for that sometimes, especially when you when you haven't really established proof of concept under a coaching staff. Remember, like App had Satterfield and Drinkwitz go one and done and go to other jobs. Or sorry, not one and done for Satterfield, one and done for Drinkwitz. Satterfield was there for quite a while. Go to other jobs, and you know, the idea was that this was kind of a set and forget, take it out of the box and it works program. And Sean Clark's best year, I believe, was 2020 and 2021, when they won 19 games those 2 years. And those are years that are A, COVID year outlier, B, roster still turning over from the last couple of guys who were there. Go 6-6 last year. You're probably not going to do a ton better than that this year if you get to that number at all. And I know you talked about this on the Patreon show last week, but yeah, that's a job to watch for these reasons.
We briefly have mentioned App in terms of the Patreon stuff right now, patreon.com/SCD. The next time we come around and update the eyes list, coming off of last week's Patreon show, and you can still go get it. That was the team that probably jumped in after last weekend. Probably App and San Diego State are the ones that we'll revisit the most aggressively. Spoiler. But again, just to go back to this, like, they're living the worst case scenario, Alex. And unlike Toledo, and I'm not passing judgment on what I'm about to say, I'm just saying it, there are standards at App that are different, where we're not going to be patient and eventually we'll figure it out and we'll dominate because we have more talent than the rest of the MAC. That's not a luxury in the Sun Belt. This conference is getting better. It's getting like, look, they barely beat ULM, and that's not a punchline. That's not as much of a punchline as I'm delivering it as. The parity in this conference is increasing because the talent is increasing, because they're finally recruiting to their Southern advantage, and it's getting harder to dominate in the Sun Belt, regardless of who you are.
Very reasonable. You know, Richard and Steven, I'm going to pause for a really quick bit of podcast business, and I'll explain why, because I see an opportunity to segue something naturally here. I have mentioned on the show before, and I'm very excited that on Friday, November 3rd and Saturday, November 4th, but the event is Friday the 3rd, I'm going to be with our friends at Homefield Apparel and our friends at Dog Central, a tremendous Georgia Bulldog site, in Athens, Georgia at UGA's homecoming, going to be moderating a panel at a Homefield happy hour in Athens. The details are pinned on my Twitter account. The game is against Missouri. UGA is hosting Mizzou. And when Josh Johns, our buddy from Homefield, Georgia alum, invited me to this, he was like, oh, you know, we'll go to the game. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, I have not been to a game in Sanford. I want to go. It'll be fun. But like, you know, I'll probably leave at halftime in my head because it is Mizzou playing Georgia, and I've got to hurry up to prep for the next day. So use the promo code SCD20 and get your Homefield Apparel stuff, 20% off your first order, homefieldapparel.com. You absolutely should. And you should come to this happy hour if you're anywhere near Athens that weekend, Friday, November 3rd. But Richard, it's occurred to me that this Mizzou-Georgia game that I'm going to be attending might actually be like one of the games of the week and of the year in the SEC, maybe. Like, certainly appears that the best chance for Georgia to drop a game in that division is this one, which makes me raise the question. Mizzou?
I was going to say, it's the SEC East Championship game, is it not?
I mean, maybe, if Mizzou doesn't drop another game. Yeah, maybe.
Well, it's, you're going to a big one, big guy. Enjoy it.
It has evolved into a pretty big one. Because
I don't think Mizzou plays this week, by the way.
So how do you look at, I mean, we've talked about them a lot on our program this year. How do you look at the outlook in the next, I mean, it's clearly there's a chance to win the SEC East, and I'm going to go ahead and assume that that's the best thing that could happen for Mizzou this year. But this kind of feels like a complete changeover in how Drinkwitz is perceived, including by us, like as in the three of us.
Yeah. He did the thing that a lot of, and he wasn't young when he took over this job. Maybe that's the wrong word. He did the thing that coaches sort of taking over at a big job need to do. And yes, Appalachian State, sorry, but he took over this SEC job and he was calling the plays. And maybe it was too much for him. I think he's even said this week that, like, he stepped back doing that. He gave he hired Kirby Moore, who's at Fresno, gave Kirby Moore play calling duties, and has been able to, in his own words, Drinkwitz's own words, find ways to add value to the organization when not calling plays. That is a, I mean, that's a legitimate, like, I think mental struggle for a lot of guys who call plays. Where is my value on this to my staff when I have done this very specific thing that is a very clear line to helping my team win every single week? I get a lot of publicity for it. It's how I built my career, and it's pretty much how I got to a head coaching seat. How do I then switch that, reverse it, and find ways to add value to my organization in other ways? And I think it's pretty clear that he's been able to do that. I think Kirby Moore. Now, look, worst case scenario here is this all falls apart. Luther Burden transfers. Kirby Moore goes, and I'm not saying this, but Kirby Moore goes to another place, goes to the NFL, he gets his own head coaching job. I don't know. He leaves. Brady Cook tries his hand in the NFL, right? Maybe Brady Cook tries to strike while the iron's hot and goes to the NFL. And then you bring a transfer quarterback in who can't really play, and the bottom falls out on the thing. That's how tenuous it can be. I'm not saying it is, but that's how tenuous it can be. Best case scenario, you either challenge significantly, or you beat Georgia. You beat Georgia, go to the SEC championship game. Hell yeah, everybody's excited. Even if you lose to Georgia, you continue this positive momentum into next year. You bring the band back together, and we have a serious conversation about Missouri all off season, which is quite something.
Look, things can change in an instant in this sport, and the 2023 Mizzou Tigers are a really good example of how the perception of a thing can rapidly shift in about 2 months of time. I want to go back to the Sun Belt for a minute. I want to talk about Georgia State. We talked a lot about Georgia State before the year. Not kindly, I should say. My impression of them, which Georgia State fans did not harangue me for, I think they pretty much agreed, has been my overwhelming impression, was that this thing was going in a bad direction. Sean Elliott was probably going to get fired after they missed a bowl game this year, and they were showing no punch in a conference where so many different teams in the last few years have put together really threatening runs, whether it's Coastal or App or Troy or South Alabama or James Madison, though they're still tied up in red tape. And there's been very little of that from Georgia State. There is still like a worst case on the table here where they've started 6-1 and they have some losable games. It could be a 7-5 or 8-4. It's a tough back half of this conference schedule for them. And we don't know yet that they're going to really have the breakthrough this year. But the best case for them is that they win the Sun Belt East and play probably against Troy in the Sun Belt Championship game against the defending champs of this league. Now, it would be a bit of an asterisk Sun Belt East Championship, probably, because James Madison is ineligible, but they have a chance to make it not be that because they actually play JMU in 2 weeks from right now. They have a real opportunity to win double-digit games here, something that they have never done as an FBS program, and to position themselves really strongly going forward in, I think, the most fun, the most geographically cohesive group of five league. I love our listeners, though, because when I say something on the hurry up, like I said on Sunday, which is I really don't know how this has happened because there wasn't a huge roster overhaul. The quarterback was the same. They didn't make huge. They did make a couple. I'll talk about this, but they didn't make enormous staff overhaul. What changed for Georgia State? And I'm not sure if this person wanted me to name them. I'll let them follow up with me about that, and then I'll credit them after the fact. But I got a really interesting sort of treatise in my inbox the other day on what has changed at Georgia State.
A Georgia State manifesto?
Yeah. Yeah. You could call it a Panther Festo, if you will. On staff, they have a new strength coach, which is very cliched, but I think is worth looking into here. Guy's name is Mike Sirignano, who has gotten rave reviews from players and staff, and who has
strength coach. I heard the name strength coach.
Yeah, that's
don't a strength even have coach. To look it up.
And the defensive coordinator that they brought in, Chad Staggs, has in particular, I think he's done a nice job.
Fucking DC, and this is something DC ass name there too, huh?
Very DCS name. We talked about this, I think, on the Sun Belt preview, that they were relying a lot on some FCS up transfers, you know, rather than P5 downs didn't work out, just bringing guys up from FCS, which I actually tend to think is a like one-to-one, I think that's a better idea. Like you'd rather get ascendant guys than guys who it didn't work out, though it can work out in either direction. But they have done very well filling in a number of holes defensively with transfers, especially from FCS. They've gotten tougher. Darren Granger was already a pretty good quarterback, and he's been solid for them this year. And you see, again, like Mizzou, like how quickly things can change. So I don't even really regret the preseason analysis of Georgia State. It looked really moribund and like things were going in a very bad direction. But it's a small sample size sport. It doesn't take a lot to like it doesn't take a long time for you to just demonstrate that you are something different than what you'd appeared to be. And Georgia State's doing it. So good for them. And I hope that they make a run and we see them in the Sun Belt Championship. That's the Georgia State treatise.
That was a very like recalcitrant, but honest. Yeah. Or, I mean, you could just do like what I do, which is just like say wild shit in August and then act like you never did.
I mean, that's honestly probably what I should do. Life would be simpler that way.
It's prognostication. It's not like it's science.
Richard, the Tennessee Volunteers.
So, okay. Obviously, best case was last year until, you know. So the best case moving forward is you beat Georgia, Mizzou takes a loss, and you get the SEC title game rematch against Alabama, and you light cigars in the what the hell do they call that thing?
Mercedes Benz.
You light cigars in the Mercedes Benz. Yes, sorry.
In the Benz, baby, we stole it from New Orleans.
The worst case, though, I think is potentially a vision of the future. The worst case is, and let's put Nico to the side as your potential future starting quarterback here. The worst case is, I think it's a theory that I've heard about this offense, which is the more you play it in conference play, the easier it is to play. It's shock, awe, hellfire, brimstone. In the beginning, when you don't play it, you can't rep the tempo, all that sort of stuff. But then, and sort of similar to the triple option, to the actual triple option, not the nouveau riche triple option, as we have referred to Tennessee's offense as on this podcast, but the more you play it, the more, like, just the more used to it you are. And this year is a sign of, like, if you don't have a guy at quarterback and you don't have a guy at wide receiver, the tempo shock and awe is nice, but like, it ain't that serious.
Gotta catch it. Gotta throw it. Gotta catch it.
And I like, is it a harbinger of potentially things to come for them? I don't know, but there's your worst case. There's your kind of insight to the worst case.
And if you just look at it like strictly from a record perspective, 7-5 or 8-4 could happen. If you just look down, they're not going to lose to UConn and they're not going to lose to Vanderbilt, but Kentucky, Missouri, and Georgia are all three of them games where things go a certain way. We have not seen an old fashioned Kentuckying in a little while at this point.
No, we have not.
But we also wouldn't foreclose it. Yeah.
But,
no. While we continue,
it's been so normal lately. I would hate that. Sorry. I just, again, great job, Tennessee fan base, for just all being kind of normal for a minute. Like, Heupel's a very calming kind of dude. I would hate that worst case scenario just because, like, they haven't been batshit for 6 months. Like, let's try and keep that going.
Want to continue G5 recalcitrance, possible mea culpa introspection hour here, and also stay in the state of Tennessee for a moment. Memphis is an interesting team to look at right now, and is the other team that I think, you know, end of last year coming into this year that I looked at in the G5 and I was like, well, this clearly is not going the way that it should be going. And I pretty loudly and repeatedly advocated or predicted that they might make a change on Ryan Silverfield last year. They didn't. And I think so far it's going very well. The best case here, which is very much in play for them, is that they win the American, that they do not drop another game. They get another shot at Tulane. And they go and they win that conference. I think like Georgia State, 8-4, 9-3, and no conference title game appearance is also still there. And there is a world where UTSA distinguishes itself over the next month and change and shows that they've surpassed Memphis in their first year in this conference. So that, like, Memphis is, I think they already have 7 wins. They have 6 or 7 wins at the moment, and like they're going to surpass what they were last season. Excuse me, they have 5 wins at the moment. They're 5-2. But I think that it's very unlikely, if you look at their schedule coming down the line, which is North Texas, USF, Charlotte, SMU, and Temple, that they don't win at least 9-ish and maybe 10-ish games, 10 if they win out in the regular season. I think they have an opportunity to put up a crooked number this year and to win this conference. I still don't know exactly, though, like where we are with these guys. I don't know about the quarterback, Seth Hennigan. They have no explosive pass game to speak of, which is a bummer when you think about what they were so good at when they were being led by Justin Fuente and Mike Norvell. And they had obviously a collection, like a succession of really good running backs. They had some tremendous explosive receivers, guys like Calvin Austin, who's playing in the NFL right now. The offense is not like thrilling in the way that those old Memphis teams were, but the defense is still really bad and seems to just kind of bail itself out on third downs, where they are 27% and have been able to get up, or 27% for offenses, and have been able to get off the field after giving up pretty bendy drives. I don't know if that's sustainable.
Bound and determined to get this dude to
fail. I am not.
I do not endorse this campaign.
I think on the other hand, you look at the schedule remaining, like I just talked about, and like 10 wins is right there. And
you have to win out. You like, have to win out.
10 wins right? is right yes. there. And like you should be rematching Tulane and having a chance to win this conference. And then depending on what goes on with the next school that Goffrey's going to talk about, that could put you in a New Year's Bowl. This is a wide variance possible set of outcomes for Memphis. It is possible that I was just early, not wrong on this one. It is possible, but it's also possible that they are playing in the New Year's games this year and really good. It's a good best case, worst case team, because it really could go either way. I think, Richard, you're right. Like, they really should win out. Like, none of these games, as you look at them, except for SMU.
I'll give them SMU, which I guess
would mean, okay, like, you could go 9-3, and your losses would be Mizzou, Tulane, SMU, and it's not bad. Wide variance. Lot to be determined for Memphis in the next 5 weeks. Steven. Tell me about another group.
Last one is Air Force. It's incredibly easy to do the best case here because they're on track for the best case, which is that they could win the Mountain West and they could be the G5 representative in the New Year's Six bowl structure-y thing, which we won't have to deal with hopefully next year. Not that we won't have G5s in the playoff. I want G5s in the playoff. I'm tired of this whole designated G5 winner goes to like a pointless, you know, Cotton Bowl or something. I think these teams deserve more. This is maybe the deepest and most talented roster in Troy Calhoun's history. Zach, I always butcher this name. Is it Larrier, the quarterback?
Believe so. Yeah.
Have any Injury of us said issues. That out loud on the show?
At that position.
No.
We talk about their running backs. We talk about their running backs and their fullbacks. We never talk about the quarterback, other than to say he's
hurt. So Zach, because this show is well researched, they have.
I think it's Zach Larrier. Yeah.
So he's real good. If you haven't watched any of this, there's a couple things here that are really interesting. Like, when you look at Service Academy stats, there's junk in there because of the option-y reality of it all, and there's also like truth
because they play a different sport.
The junk is that they have a top 10 scoring defense. That's junk. That's because you have reduced possessions and obviously like you have less chances to allow points. The reality, like the thing that you look at, and I will verify as evidence that this is a really good football team, is that they are behind only Oregon and LSU in points per drive. That's crazy.
They're good.
What they are doing is working. They have an extremely efficient. I mean, look, they're back to the top of the rushing stats. The funny thing about this, I'm just going to deviate for a second, and it'll bridge into the worst case scenario. Is like Richard wrote a story with Connor Ward at SI in the offseason about this massive zeitgeist thing about the triple option in Army, right? And Jeff Munkin telling everyone who would listen that Army is changing its offense because it has to. Our buddy Cole Kublik, He did an intro piece on the sideline Saturday night when Army played LSU and said the same thing. Same sources cited. Do you know who hasn't really changed shit and is still absolutely dominating at it? Air Force. Mm-hmm. Like, they haven't really changed anything, and they never panicked, and they never made a public statement that, like, oh, this style of ball is, like, outlawed now. They just keep whooping ass and leading the nation in rushing. I'm just throwing this out here mainly because I don't quite understand this disparity that I'm seeing publicly, and this is kind of my area of interest and responsibility on the show is Service Academy football. I'm not poking holes at Army. I'm not. I'm just saying, like, Air Force sure didn't panic. Also, like, Navy changed its coaching staff. They hired Kennesaw State's OC. I'm just throwing this out there, guys. Air Force is doing what Air Force would do in any, like, normal season. They're just doing it especially well. They have a lot of upperclassmen talent. Here's the problem here. The best case scenario is it's a high ceiling because of what's going on in the G5. I do think they have the inside track here. The problem is it's the Boise problem, not Boise State and playing them. It's that this is what Boise suffered for all those years in a really thin Mountain West. If they lose once, they're probably out.
It's done. The wrap.
They're Godfrey, probably out because like you have like a one loss Tulane right behind. Just this one example I pulled. So Tulane's one loss is to Ole Miss, who's probably going to finish somewhere in the top 15-20 range. Like, you're not going to be able to compare resumes. You're not.
Godfrey, Richard. Here's one thing though, and I think this is also an Air Force conversation. Friend of the show, Chris Vanini, wrote this morning. He was answering a mailbag question. He was like, is this Air Force season the last big run we will ever see from a service academy? And I think you take into account the fact that Army has joined the air, will join the AAC next year as a football only member.
Which is a bad idea.
What do you think about that?
I think it's a terrible idea.
But continue. Not the Army thing.
But continue.
Not the Army thing, the Air Force thing.
It's not a bad argument because I do think, for instance, Army, I think, has stacked the deck against itself. We've seen Navy essentially. Now, there's a lot of mitigating circumstances here. Navy has eroded since it joined the American. The year that it lost, the streak against Army was snapped. They were on their third string quarterback in the Army game because they had the other two starting quarterbacks were injured in the, almost said Mountain West, in the American Championship game against Matt Rule's Temple. My point is, like, when you go to the American, and like Nia Matalolo said this multiple times, maybe it's one of the reasons they canned him instead of like Gladchuk looking at reality. When you are a service academy and you got to go back then, they were going like Houston, UCF, Cincinnati, like week to week to week. When the skill position disparity is that bad week to week to week, it's hard to triple your way out of anything. I think Army had a sweet spot in the way that it's scheduled. I don't think it hurt anybody. And now that you're signing up to play teams that are going to be more talented at those skill positions, like, yeah, you know what? They beat UTSA in San Antonio. They did this year, but they're also like 2-4, 2-5.
Dude,
it's a wear down effect. It's like the body blow theory for service academies. That thing literally just hits different. Going back to Air Force for a second, Richard, I might reject that because when are we going to see a deeper or better Mountain West?
Because I was about to say, the only thing we do have, like, here is the Mountain West stinks. So, yes.
The Mountain West.
I'm saying Washington State are going to be in this league, whether it's called the Pac-12 or the Mountain West.
We're going to talk about, not that thing that Alex just said, but on the next Patreon, like, coaching update, there's some seismic stuff happening in that conference at a coaching level because there are a lot of programs with major problems. So if I'm Air Force and I have this system that's been refined, I feel pretty good. Now, worst case scenario, to go back to the actual gimmick, the worst case scenario is not going to happen. That is the one loss that you take is actually Army, because they would lose the CIC inside track. They would lose to Army, which they hate, and that would knock them out of the G5 rep for the New Year's Six Bowl, all that nonsense. That's the actual worst case scenario. The kid's injury, Larrier, I'm just going to go with that, against Wyoming.
But he's
like,
back.
It didn't look
he's
like
playing.
It didn't look like it bothered him against, I watched part of the Navy game. I guess that's the worst case scenario, although they were decent without him. I mean, honestly, like, I can't, like, as far as a worst case scenario, I guess it would just be like losing a Mountain West game, potentially affecting your conference championship. But it's pretty hard to find like a worst case scenario for Air Force this year, unless you're talking about like three losses down the stretch, and one of them is Army. But I mean, as of right now, they are so significantly better than the other two Service Academy teams and almost everybody with the exception of like Wyoming and Fresno in the Mountain West. And they beat Wyoming.
Weird conference.
Super weird.
Richard Johnson, what are we doing?
Godfrey, you're hearing it more and more. The people are asking us to T-A-S-T-E-I-T. Godfrey, they are holding up one side.
No, we're not doing noises, Alex. Was that you? Who just did that?
Because
we're not doing mouth
the
noises.
People simply want us to taste it.
So gross.
It's the week 9 tasting menu. There have already been some games this week because of Conference USA's whole weeknight thing. Liberty beat up on Western Kentucky at WKU. Liberty is, this was so an incorrect preseason prediction that it would take a year. The Libs did win, and it did not take a year.
Had to hold on. The Libs sort of had to hold on there at the end, by the way.
But when you look at it at the end of it, Liberty is 8-0. Western Kentucky, which appeared to be their biggest competition in this league, is 4-4. And the conference records are obviously not quite that lopsided, but Liberty is going to win this league or is going to be the number one, is the shoe-in for the conference title game and the clear favorite to win this conference in its first year.
Alex, did you see Jamie Chadwell's tweet this morning?
What was it?
Jamie Chadwell, I guess there was like two Michigan fans at the Western Kentucky game, and Jamie Chadwell tweeted like they're spying on us or something like that because we're like playoff adjacent because they're undefeated.
Pretty good, pretty good. I like.
There is also a weird Michigan connection at Western Kentucky with the Harbaugh family.
Oh, good point. On Wednesday night, most notably, Sam Houston is going to try to win one at home against UTEP, and. We'll see. As I've said, I don't think they're going 0-12. I think they're going to find one here against the dregs of Coosa, but I don't know. And someone is going to be left feeling very bleak. So that's Wednesday night's interesting thing to me. Thursday night, Georgia State at Georgia Southern for the belt of the real GSU. Godfrey, you grew up, you know, kind of bathed in the whole Georgia Southern thing. What can you tell me about the regional dynamic at play and how these schools see each other and how serious a rivalry this is? Because obviously they have very different
Georgia
histories.
Southern. Yeah. It's not App Georgia Southern.
Very different
but it's
amounts
definitely,
of history.
A rivalry. There's an anxiety based in the Georgia on the Georgia Southern side of this that the advantages that they held for so long, being kind of like the other school in the state that wasn't UGA or Tech and the only one way down south. Like shout out Valdosta. I was just talking about at their level. Like there's been. I'll put it this way. Southern's never going to talk about state, but they're going to have a lot of anxiety when state finds success, and no one at Southern wants to see state sustain that success. So this is a very important game, regardless of record. You know, the thing that in this rivalry, Southern kind of rubs state's nose in the fact that like, oh, you're a commuter school, you don't have as many like hardcore fans. We've been selling out stadiums. You know, we had these national championships. The bottom line is that, like, if state ever got it together, it would like dramatically affect the way Southern builds its roster and the identity it has. So that's kind of the genesis of the anger, I guess. But then I think most Southern fans will be like, oh, no, they're not our real rival.
Thank you for that. Good to hear. On Friday night, FAU Charlotte is the only FBS game. FAU should win that one. Charlotte is bad. Probably won't be a ton of people there. And in my opinion, not a bad night to go and see a high school game, honestly. Brown at Penn is also happening. And if Brown wins, that will leave 6 of the 8 Ivies going into Saturday at exactly 2-2 in the conference. And remember, they share titles in the Ivy, and that does come up a lot, including last year. So if you like entropy, you need to root for Brown, which has actually gotten better this year, to beat Penn in that game.
If you like entropy, you need to root for Brown.
You heard it here first. There's no other college football podcast that's going to tell you that this weekend. Saturday in the early slate, Houston at Kansas State. I think Kansas State is going to bludgeon these guys, despite a pretty nice showing by Houston against Texas. It's a trench situation, and on both sides of the ball, yep. Kansas State is just too much for these guys. And looks, after what they've done the last couple weeks to Texas Tech and to TCU, they just look scary. And I think that I would be a little worried if I were Texas about 2 weeks from now, because Kansas State is looking like the Big 12 champion Kansas State of last year.
There is a, and Utah does a similar thing where, like, I think Kansas State takes unique pleasure in making sure you fucking know that you're not in the weight class, right? Like, I think they Houston, I do think, may learn a hard lesson here about moving on up to the East.
Right. It's not a good team to play in your first year in a new conference when you're trying to catch up on depth and size to the rest of the league. It's not a good team to play. Also, I'm just thinking about this. Utah and Kansas State are going to be – no one's going to play each other every year. Well, most teams will not play each other every year in the new Big 12, but Utah-Kansas State is going to be a physical
– That's going to be physical
that,
thing.
That
very, very
is the,
yeah, mean.
That is the game as it's meant to be played. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's – I'll look forward to watching that game. That'll be a nice side effect of the realignment thing. Oklahoma at Kansas.
Risky.
Oklahoma still hasn't lost a game.
Richard, sell me on this from like the Kansas
be
side.
Careful.
Sell me this. Like, is this possible?
Yeah, dude. Apparently, Jason Bean is no longer bad, sources are saying.
Is he still going to be the guy? Do we know anything about Jalen Daniels' medicals?
I don't know about Jalen Daniels. I know the back is still bothering him. Like, the Texas thing was like, I understand that Texas assistants like looked up during warmups and realized he wasn't in pads and were like, huh, that's interesting. So I don't know what the deal is with Jalen Daniels.
Dude, a lot of J Danielses. We're trying to get to the bottom of why there are so many J Danielses. We're working on it.
Do we have is this a Mike Williams situation?
It seems like Jason Bean, it seems like you can run a functional, legitimate, multifaceted offense with Jason Bean. They've been doing it the last couple of weeks.
On the Kansas side, I think you have to hope that Oklahoma has one game this year where they remember that defensively they're Oklahoma. And it hasn't happened yet. Like, Oklahoma has not had the defensive letdown game at all in their first seven. Does that mean they're due? Because this is, again, kind of goes to the, how do you see the sport? Do you see it in the Godfrey way? Like, you're Oklahoma, at some point you're going to have a defensive meltdown? Or do you just look at the body of work this year where they've looked incredibly solid on defense? And the reason that this has to happen for Kansas to have a chance
is Oklahoma being bad.
Like, a lot. Like, Kansas cannot stop. There's no chance Kansas can stop them. So they need to hope that Oklahoma has a big step backward defensive
Kansas
game that they just haven't had yet.
Off a bye week. That Kansas offense off a bye week. Be careful.
Be careful. Be careful. Okay. We will see. South Carolina at Texas A&M. We just talked about South Carolina. Am I then to understand, Richard, that if A&M were to lose this game, that would be a bad idea for Jimbo Fisher?
I am not currently going towards anxiety bowl status here on either end. I think the A&M people are like, we're looking for an inflection point. We're looking for a reason. Don't give them the reason.
Middle of the slate on Saturday. Oregon, Utah. Gonna be physical. Gonna be fun. Utah hasn't lost at Rice-Eccles since the COVID year, and before that since 2018. I don't know if it's the altitude or the attitude or both or what it is, but this is a brutal challenge for Oregon, and they might meet it because they're really good. But this shit is hard. It's not really a matchup that you want to have when you have one loss and are trying to stay in the playoff race.
This is one of the games for Oregon. One of the discourses that we had about Oregon in the Oregon-Washington game beyond the fourth down was this. Some of how they managed those situations was an identity conversation. If you're going to build this as SEC Northwest with the level of physicality, with a running back as good as Bucky Irving, who I think is really, really good player. If it's third and two, man, and 75,000 people know you're going to run the ball, you know what sometimes you have to do and what sometimes you're able to do for certain teams? Run the fucking ball and gain 2 yards.
Yep.
And not tush push gain 2 yards.
Yep.
Like, I mean, line it up, strap it up, and go. And it doesn't matter. And so if you're going to be Oregon and you're going to try to you're going to try to say, hey, we're blue collar in color changing cleats. It doesn't matter. This is a team that you got to prove it against in that league.
BYU at Texas. I would have believed in some upset possibility here until whatever that was that BYU put forward against TCU, which I think requires a bit of a recasting of things. But obviously BYU, you know, they've had a couple of solid performances. They played very well against Texas Tech, got some assistances from Texas Tech's backup quarterback throwing them the ball. Would you take this seriously as a possible trouble spot for Texas? Maybe a look ahead for Kansas State?
No.
Towards Kansas State?
Have y'all watched BYU this year? Like, it's not good.
I have watched BYU this year.
Is it like that one year? What was it like 2019 when they were like, what's going on here? I can't remember what year it was.
They do now. Yes. To your point, they do vacillate a good bit, but I will say just overall, some of us who push a pro G5 narrative have not had a great time introducing these four schools into the Big 12 this year, but I blame Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell for going to Wisconsin and just like, well, actually, no, I take that back. Cincinnati should not have hired Scott Satterfield.
I will tell you, and BYU fans, this one's a treat for you. I'm not going to hit you with the mature physical team thing this week because I think BYU might get like 30 rushing yards. No, like Texas is going to physically maul them. Would be
it
my
doesn't
word.
Matter. The idea that dads on the offensive line are going to solve a problem, that first off, no, because we're all tired. And two, when you run into like legit ass defensive talent, like I'm gonna keep sliding in hashtag Bo Davis was right until it like matriculates on Texas Twitter.
Trying to make it be on a t-shirt somewhere.
I'm trying to make Duke, fetch work, yeah.
Duke at Louisville. A much more compelling matchup than it looked like it would be before the season. Maybe a less compelling matchup than it looked like it would be 3 or 4 weeks ago as these teams started to run up wins. Riley Leonard's medicals, I don't know, and especially about like if he's actually like healthy. Louisville at home off a bye, and with that Riley Leonard medical uncertainty, I think you would hope for a Louisville victory here. They are -4 in this game. Interesting thing that I noted, Duke offense goes 3 and out on fully 1/3 of their drives, which is one of the handful of highest rates in the country. And the Louisville defense forces 3 and outs on 43% of their drives, which is one of the best rates in the country. Does that mean that Duke's defense could just be on the field a lot tonight, you know, on Saturday night in this game? I don't know.
Go ahead.
The thing here with Duke that I was going to say, like, dude, Florida State, when the backup came in that game, Florida State was just like, okay, you're just not throwing the ball. Mm-mm. Like, we're not even concerned about whether you're going to throw the ball or not.
Why would Louisville sneaky State. Like just a shout out because I had this show up in the mentions. We'll talk about Louisville soon. I'm liking what I'm seeing. I don't have a complete picture yet. We'll make some calls. I'm not being a dick. Like I like what I'm seeing. I think Louisville is developing ahead of schedule.
The Riley Leonard thing is uncertain. Duke's not saying, which is typical obviously in this sport. Iowa is on bye this week, but Mississippi State Auburn, so we might get an Iowa game in the SEC.
Jesus, Mary.
No, seriously, like, I mean, we're talking 6-0 State here might be a good final score.
How old were you guys?
Maybe 10-6 Auburn. No, I'm not lying
how
at all.
Old,
I mean, like,
how old were you guys even in college when Baby I'm Burning happened? Where were you in life? Because I watched that in a bar. Yeah.
This is going to be... Look, this is going to be a bad football game. This is not one of those like there are games where defenses thump and you play in a certain. No, I'm serious. Like I don't think that low scoring automatically equates to bad. There can be well played, crisp defensive football. I think this will just be a bad football game.
It's like that game Auburn played Mizzou last year, where like for 58 minutes you did not have to kid yourself into thinking that was in any way, shape, or form interesting. Yes, one of those.
How lucky is the Reverend that he got both of the Mississippis at home in his first year? Like, that is fortunate. That is fucking notable, believe me.
But the thing is, I mean, it's not like they won last week. I guess
no,
not
I'm saying
having to
just
go
not
to
going into
Fought
a stadium
Hemingway
where you were
going
to get
him,
fucking
given
harassed.
Circumstances. But he visited them like, when he was at Liberty.
Him going into Starkville would be a bad time. Trust me. They still don't like him.
So Southern Miss at App. Wow. I am familiar with your reporting, both of yours. I mean, you talked about this on a patron show recently. It seems like Will Hall, I won't spoil it, but that Will Hall is not, you know, necessarily in huge trouble here, despite how bad things have gotten at Southern Miss. But would you call this one an angst bowl, an anxiety bowl?
Anxiety? No, because it doesn't qualify that like there's a, I think the likeliest scenario is that App wins this game and that it doesn't affect the position of either. But I definitely I appreciate you leaning into the bit, but no, I think that it doesn't quite apply here. App better win this game. I mean, we just got done talking about this, but like App really, really needs this game. They need every game from here on out.
Purdue at Nebraska wasn't, I mean, didn't look like a likely candidate to make the tasting menu.
I'm sorry,
but I'm just asking the question.
Was that it? Yeah, I was gonna say, was when you said Purdue and Nebraska, was that in the form of a question?
Yeah.
Are you like offering me an appetizer opinion, that I don't want, or
the opinions Nebraska? Of 33% of Split Zone Duo LLC do not often portend the opinions of 100%.
No, but look, I do think this
what
is
what Richard
worth
is
doing.
Saying is we didn't write this one.
I think that this
is
worth
doing. What
the fuck
is this
doing on here? Because I think this was worth doing because I want to point out. Let's go back. What was the last Nebraska game that you paid close attention to as it was happening?
The Michigan game.
I mean, it's
the Colorado game.
It certainly wasn't in the last 3 weeks. Certainly wasn't Illinois. Certainly wasn't when they were on bye. Certainly wasn't Northwestern. The point is they had some new coach buzz coming into the year because it's a new coach. They had a national TV Thursday game to start. They had Colorado, so people were watching them, and they looked very bad. They are now 4-3. They've won three out of four. They've won 4 out of 5. They have recovered a little bit. I think they are now a pretty good position to make a bowl game. The quarterback, Heinrich Harburg, is not, you know, good, but he has thrown he's thrown 4 picks on 113 passes, and he's run it well. Whereas Jeff Sims threw 4 picks on 34 passes. And Matt Rhule has, I think, recovered this defense pretty nicely. It's been a nice year one. Matt Rhule understands defense. You're going to be good at defense thing for Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And by simply ceasing to give the ball to the other team all of the time, mm-hmm. they have stabilized a lot.
Can I, Alex, let me borrow game. This.
Yeah.
You're talking me. You're not talking to me into watching this game. But you are talking me into like a little project here. So here's the little project. Ha! I scheduled you. I tricked y'all. All right, we got Purdue, Michigan State, Maryland, Scone, and Iowa left. Here's my question. This is an open question. You can hit the the Split Zone account on, I don't know, Instagram, whatever you want to use, Twitter. I'm asking Nebraska fans because I genuinely can't get a feeling for this. It's year one. Is there a possibility of y'all getting excited? And don't say like winning out. Like obviously if y'all won out and beat like Iowa and Wisconsin, like yes, you would be excited. But I want to know what result leaves you feeling really sunny going into the offseason and next year. I don't know. I genuinely don't. Like to Alex's point where he's like, hey guys, you look up and they have 4 wins. Well, that means they're probably going to go bowling. Is bowling enough to get excited based on the way that the frost years ended? I don't know. I'm not being a dick. I don't know.
They haven't bowled since 2016, right?
And so, do you guys remember the old stat about Nebraska? Yeah. They were like the bowlingest team in history and the bowl streak and all this stuff. And like, so if they just go and if they just do like a Music City Bowl or something like that, y'all
I think their
come
fans will be
over.
Happy. I do. I think their fans will be happy. Yes. Now, happier if that includes a win against Iowa or Wisconsin. Which they beat Iowa last year, so it's not like that's a panacea.
I think, so my thesis is that you go 3-1 against all the other teams, and then you somehow manage to upset Iowa by, I don't know, scoring 10 points?
Yeah, they should beat Michigan State. And honestly, I think they'll probably beat Maryland, whose season is kind of falling apart before your eyes.
That game's on Black Friday. That's going to be dumb enough to watch. That's going to be like big stupid.
The Iowa game?
Yeah, the Iowa-Nebraska game is going to be like, yeah, that's going to be like bum fights.
So anyway, and also, you know, Purdue has been better than they could have been maybe in Ryan Walters' first year. So maybe not like the game of the day, but keeping one eye on during
still kind Richard, of a light Richard, middle we still slate like that higher. From Morgan Utah. We still like that higher. We're just giving them we're giving them some time.
Year one. Year
we're giving one, them some time.
Year one.
Yeah.
All right. Year one.
Saturday later, Wyoming at Boise State. Two teams going in different directions.
Whoever can run the ball the most.
Yeah, it's gonna be jarring, Godfrey, to watch Boise get physically like dominated. Like not just Air Force though, dominated, dude. Run around dominated. But I was saying if they
used
do,
to not.
Sorry, I should have said that.
No, but like, they look with this not. Team now. What is perplexing about Boise? And Boise is 3-4. Is that right? That's what their record is. They have been riding Ashton Jeanty really hard, and he's having a great year. He's got like some, I think, the most touches in the country, or did before they went on their bye week, and he's averaging like 6-7 yards a touch. He's been very productive while getting the ball all the time. But they have blown games, blew a huge lead against Memphis, blew a huge lead against Colorado State, culminating in the Hail Mary that gets batted into somebody's arms in the end zone. They scheduled Washington, which didn't work out. You know, not great in the end.
And UCF.
Oh, and they lost. Yeah, and they lost to UCF. I believe at home. Yeah, at home.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, I think that they, I don't think they know who their best quarterback is. I don't think they've really decided, Andy Avalos and staff. And when you're Boise and you have an individual season like they're getting from their featured back on offense, and but you have like big blown leads and quarterback issues, doesn't it make you ask a question about the man in charge?
I think he's okay right now, but I'm also saying this before they play these three crucial games out of the remaining five, which is like Wyoming, Fresno, Air Force, which are the three best teams right now in the league. If they buckshot those three, then we're going to have a much more serious conversation about Boise. That's going to be a hell of a lot more than like, oh, we need to change up the coaching staff. Because keep in mind, they changed the offensive staff. They had the OC from UC Davis, his name escapes me, and they fired him midseason. Like, you got to win one, probably two of these last three if you want to avoid a more total sort of like system inspection that I think is going to happen regardless. Maybe, Alex, I can't say that they've been out physical, but they are also haven't played the teams. I'll put it this way. They have yet to play the teams that win a lot by doing that. And those are those three teams that I just said. Fresno to a slightly lesser degree, but Air Force and Wyoming are going to lean and lean and lean and lean. And I haven't seen anything out of Boise where, so here's part of the problem is that this entire program identity was built on out-athleting the Mountain West because they were recruiting better than half the Pac-12 for like 15 years. That's true. They were recruiting and certainly developing better than the bottom end of the Pac-12 was. And so when it got to conference play, as y'all know, they would just stomp ass at skill positions. Trench-wise, it's not the same. I think skill position-wise, it's not the same. I also think Wyoming's just, they're built to grind on you. And I don't know if Boise right now has the ability to build and maintain a lead against a team that looks like Wyoming. And then by the time you get to Air Force, I sure as shit don't think it.
Gonna stay in this conference for a second. Go a little bit out of order on the kickoff times of the games. UNLV at Fresno has honest to goodness Mountain West standings.
Dude, that's a good game. That's a good game. Watch the game. It will be entertaining. Like it will be enjoyable.
I'll highlight UNLV here because I think Barry Odom has done a nice year one job there, and got a bit of a leftover gift, I would say, from Carlos Arroyo, who got fired after it didn't work out. This was in 2022. They recruited Jaden Maiava, who was their backup quarterback to Doug Brumfield, who's been a good quarterback for them over the last few years. Brumfield got hurt in like the first couple weeks of this year. I think it was when they played Vanderbilt and they won that game on a late field goal. But Maiava has just been like, after being kind of this very celebrated recruit for Arroyo, has emerged as the backup in the last month and change and been really, really good. They've lost one game. They've already clinched bowl eligibility, which they hadn't done in quite some time. And their only loss was to Michigan, and they actually comported themselves much better against Michigan than almost – it was 28 Michigan's smallest margin of victory of the year. It's up there. It's near the least lopsided Michigan games of the year. They're pretty good, and I am intrigued.
Hold on. Near the least lopsided Michigan games this year is like, that's doing a lot of
it's
work.
True.
All right.
It's
Michigan has played the same game 8 straight times this season. I think Michigan State changed the signs and it didn't fucking matter. All right.
Well, 28 is about stand. I mean, I don't know, man. Minnesota lost by 42, Indiana by 45, Michigan State by 49, Nebraska by 38. I mean, UNLV, get them a Big Ten bid is what I'm saying. And Fresno is hanging in. They've had to rotate through quarterbacks. But they are hanging in, and I'm not going to count out a Jeff Tedford situation until he is counted out.
Arroyo may go down as like the Tony Levine of this situation. If they maintain this success and compete for Mountain West titles, like for those of you who don't know what I'm saying, Tony Levine was this sort of like ill-fated head coach at Houston, but he was a really good recruiter relative to where Houston was at the time. And then Tom Herman kind of comes in as like just with more star power and kind of locks it all into place and rides that wave. I'm not saying Barry Odom can't recruit or anything like that. I'm just saying the situation was just a hell of a lot better going into 23 than the 22 record reflected. And I think Marcus Arroyo was a victim of AD change. Honestly, it happens, especially the G5 level. You're about to see it happen a lot more in this cycle.
Ohio State at Wisconsin. Richard, explain.
This is one of those that it gets built up every year. College game day has even been on site a time or two. And you're like, oh, Wisconsin, obviously Ohio State's Ohio, but like, oh, Wisconsin, a good Big Ten team, a good Big Ten brand. Surely they, guys, it's like 11 of 12, I think. Multiple of those games, by the way, have been in the Big Ten championship game when Wisconsin has gotten smoked.
Oh, yeah, the Meyer resume year where they kept the starters in and won 59-0.
Yes, yes.
It is so often a night game, too, in primetime. It is again this year. I'm sure the NBC studio crew will be there. Like, it's the classic, college football atmosphere. Something interesting might happen here, game, and it doesn't.
Alex, if you want a micro anxiety situation, I think Phil Longo needs to see some fucking points on the board. And this may not be the week that it happens, but
yeah,
this weird marriage that I still don't understand of Phil Longo and Luke Fickell, not going great, Bob.
I'm gonna point something out. You're way more worried about that than I am. By the way.
I'm not worried.
I'm just saying it's weird,
Steven. It's weird. Yeah, Phil Longo, Wisconsin, the way he plays, the way they play. But we said this, I know I said this before the year, and it's been a little worse than I thought it would be. There are going to be games, and there have been games, numerous games, where it's like, dude, what the fuck? Give the ball to Braylon Allen. Like, why aren't you just doing this?
Yes.
And they lose or it's ugly. That has happened. But if you look, they're 5-2. They've improved by 9 spots in SP Plus on offense this year. Like, it's what we thought was going to happen, which was it'll be a little weird. And there will be some minutes where it's like, dude, you need to like touch grass, Phil Longo, and realize who's on your roster. But the result is actually like mildly improving.
I'm sowing discord for the future, buddy, because when the situations that you just mentioned happen, you two little nerds are the ones who always say, I'm not wrong, I'm just early. I'm telling you for a fact that when Wisconsin is better and more is expected of them in the year 2, 3, 4 plus of Fickell, to have that Longo style offense vex you at key moments like it did at North Carolina, that shit's not going to sit well in Camp Randall.
Okay, that's very fair. I'm just saying that while I think he is frustrating.
I just want to understand why that hire was made. It's not even against Phil. Okay. It just doesn't fit. And I'm not talking about like bully ball Wisconsin of yore. I'm just saying it's a weird move.
Colorado at UCLA. I'll tell you, I'm thinking about going to this game. Got my Nokian tires. Take them on my sedan. Go out to Pasadena.
You're going to need them to drive all the way to Pasadena.
Yeah, it's true. But if you're going to sit in traffic for that long, you want to be doing it on the best tires you possibly can. And that's what Nokian gives me. But here's the thing. I actually don't know. I have not been to a game at the Rose Bowl, and I am absolutely going to go to the Rose Bowl this year. I need to decide do I want my first trip to the Rose Bowl to just be like a UCLA regular season game? Am I cool with that?
No.
Dude, it's going to be.
I know no Keen will get me there, but that's all I'm saying. It's.
I will say this. It is actually like, and I don't even, you know, we've done, you know, the star quality of Colorado Sideline or whatever. Yada, yada. I wrote a story about it at SI a couple weeks ago. It is going to be interesting, I think, to have this like literally be in LA and them obviously having dropped quite a bit of steam. Like, where are we at now with the
well, Disney clearly thinks that there's still steam because it's the ABC primetime. So yeah, they think like, people will watch. Yeah.
Before the Oregon game, somebody at ESPN told me, Quint Kesnick in the story that I wrote, sorry, was like, oh yeah, they're going to get picked every week. Like, they're going to get picked every week moving forward. Doesn't matter win or lose.
I do think that on the field, they are underdogs here. And if they don't win this game, I think that a bowl shifts all the way to unlikely again.
They still have three ranked teams left.
Yeah. Maybe we bailed on our Colorado priors a little early. I don't know.
I didn't.
Let me see where it lands. I did. You might have a little bit. I don't know. It would be disappointing given the start if they go 5-7, and that would still be, by the way, great improvement. That would be a quintupling of what they did last year. It's not like, I think the year has already been a solid improvement no matter what happens from here, but this is one of their like more winnable games left, and it's not easy.
As we, as I interjected on Louisville's behalf earlier, I feel like I kind of need to do the same thing on for UCLA as usual. UCLA is just sort of quietly doing it. I think, I mean, this year it's a more explainable reason for the neglect because you have one, the Deion thing, and then two, legitimate national title contenders at the top of this league and the USC saga. Like, there's just a lot packed into this. Sorry, I did not mean to pun that. Pac-12, UCLA. Richard and I spent a little time talking about sort of like chip evolution before the season started, and it's just kind of one of those teams I forgot to check in with. Everything's coming along fairly nicely, right? They're not the best team in this league.
Well, except for one thing.
Yes.
Richard, I'm curious about the one. Like, it hasn't worked out at all for Dante Moore. What do you make of it? It's not easy to play true freshman.
Well, part of it, isn't that just a DTR hangover? I mean...
No, I mean, the young man has not been good, but it's hard to be good as a true freshman quarterback in a power conference. And he's benched now. They're back to Ethan Garbers, which is less exciting than seeing what Dante Moore could do.
Yeah, I'm interested to like see this offense, like what it, where we're at here, evolution wise, where we're going. I'm curious about that.
This is the Pac-12 and one of the nightcaps of the entire college football slate on this Saturday. Oregon State at Arizona. Richard, you've got an MCOTW.
Yeah, yep. I'm curious here. I'm very curious about how this game plays out. Ricky Hunley, Arizona's defensive line coach, is the minority coach of the week in an interesting schematic spot. Again, please, a reminder, minority coach of the week is not a predictor or pretender of schematic success. It's simply taking a minority coach in a certain spot and saying, huh. That's interesting. I should say about Ricky Hunley before. Ricky Hunley is a guy who's been the NFL Minority Coaching Fellowship Program for multiple teams, including Alex's Steelers, is a member of the Board of Directors for the Black Coaches Association and a representative for the SEC and Big 12 on the American Football Coaches Association Minority Issues Committee. So Ricky Hunley's got some bona fides here. Besides being a defensive line coach, in which he will face a hell of a spot against this Oregon State offensive line, offensive front, and offensive tack. But this is a sneaky, sneaky second tier of the Pac-12 game, considering what Oregon State, I think, is playing at this year. And considering Arizona has scared the hell out of some teams here in the last couple of weeks, and obviously smoked Wazoo.
Just want to point out real fast, since, again, the whole spiel I just gave about UCLA being ignored, Oregon State not ignored. Like, Oregon State is three winnable games away from having a, like, playoff attention. I'm saying this seriously because they don't see Washington or Oregon until the end. They have one three-point loss. It's my fault, like, on this show, or at least for my responsibility to only talk about, oh, they were left out by conference expansion, Pac-2. That's all we've talked about. Y'all, this team is one loss by 3 points. Like, if you flip that result around right now, because Wazoo's lost three in a row, oh, wow, we're really talking about something here. Like,
also, Oregon State's about to win probably like 20 games over 19 or 20 games over 2 years.
Yes, and they were one of the worst programs in college football before Smith came back to his alma mater with a blueprint that looked not impressive or unique in any particular way, and yet it worked. And it is working. We're going to enter like Thanksgiving time on the schedule with like Oregon State in the playoff conversation, provided like it's Arizona, Colorado, Stanford. Those are all winnable games. All you have to do is play those simpler games in front of you. I'm not trying to take away from Richard's bit here. Like Arizona is, what do we say, Richard, here? Like they're a feisty out.
Frisky.
But they're beatable.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't know. Do we know if Fafita's starting in this game? I don't know the quarterbacks.
We don't know.
I don't know.
No. But they have potentially two playable quarterbacks on their roster. And Arizona is the other side of this is that I think they're very good. Like not only the two quarterbacks, but the running game is like mean. And Oregon State, their last two games, has won despite Cal and UCLA both kind of bulldozing through them on the ground. I actually think I kind of like Arizona State in this game. If like that minus three
Arizona
and a half, and did I say Arizona State? Oh my goodness! Excuse me. Sorry, my apologies.
For shame.
I hate it when I verbally typo on this show. I called Iowa Utah last week. I noticed when I was listening back. You got to watch the film sometimes. I think Arizona plus 3.5 here from a vested interest perspective is pretty compelling. If that's your thing.
I did just dress all this up, and then they could absolutely have like the Washington ASU type experience here. And trip and fall completely out of contention by losing this particular game. Because it ain't going to be Stanford, and it probably won't be Colorado.
I love your optimistic prose, Stephen. I do.
How so?
Well, it's been a great season, and they absolutely could just trip over themselves, and everything could be miserable.
I'm a fatalist. Go Falcons.
Oh, by the way, if you guys think you're getting out of here without this addendum to the podcast, you're out of your mind. Tasting Menu Sunday. Noon God's time in, I believe, whatever the hell they're calling.
He's going to make ketchup me cheer bottle, against the artist this
formerly
team.
Known as the Big Ketchup Bottle. Jags, Steelers, guys, it's Alex, for it feet. All. It is the second SZD Bowl of the season, which means it is for the SZD Commander-in-Chief's Trophy as the Jaguars went across the pond and beat the Falcons a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
Obviously.
Wow.
Alex, we don't have the Steelers. We don't have the Steelers-Falcons to determine this, though.
I'll tell you this. I'm not concerned because my NFL experience, I've had everything I want in terms of last week, I got to go.
Boom.
Last week, I got to sit in the greatest seats I've ever sat in for a football game and watch the Steelers beat the Rams in the nicest football stadium I've ever been in. And so I don't even care from this point forward. I've already enjoyed football. I've already enjoyed football as much as I could enjoy NFL football. So the Steelers can lose to the Jaguars. The rest of their games.
How many championships have you seen in your lifetime? In the pro level?
Nine?
Pro teams, four. Two each.
In your lifetime,
just four? Five. Three from the Penguins, two from the Steelers.
There's three from the Penguins that I can count.
Five. Yeah.
Richard, pros?
Five. But I mean, how many seasons of Pirates count against that?
No, I don't want to hear about the Pirates, Richard. How many pro teams?
There is no deleterious effect there. I will say this though: I am terrified of a classic Tomlining in this game. Me and Alex basically every Sunday, like when Mike Tomlin wins one of these games, I believe the Steelers are like 2-point underdogs. Mike Tomlin wins one of these games, me and Alex text back and forth about how it's just a classic. Like the Monday night game they beat the Browns a couple weeks ago, just classic Tomlining. You're the Browns. They're the Steelers. You're not beating them.
By the way, the Steelers have been outgained in every game they've played this year, and they're 4-2. When we say they're Iowa, we're not kidding.